Chapter 24.
How does a police detective afford a place like this? Molly asked.
We were sitting in the Blue Beetle on a quiet residential street in Crestwood. It was late afternoon, with a heavy overcast. The houses on the street were large ones. Rudolph's place, whose address I'd gotten from Murphy, was the smallest house on the block, but it was on the block. It backed right up to the Cook County Forest Preserve, too, and between the old forest and the mature trees, it gave the whole area a sheltered, pastoral quality.
He doesn't, I said quietly.
You mean he's dirty? Molly asked.
Maybe, I said. Or maybe his family has money. Or maybe he managed to mortgage himself to the eyeballs.
People get real stupid when it comes to buying homes. Pay an extra quarter of $1 million for a place because it's in the right neighborhood. Buy houses they damn well know they can't afford to make the payments on. I shook my head. They should make you take some kind of iota of common sense quiz before you make an offer.
Maybe it isn't stupid, Molly said. Everybody wants home to mean something. Maybe the extra money they pay creates that additional meaning for them.
I grimaced. I'd rather have my extra meaning come from the ancient burial ground under the swimming pool, or from knowing that I'd built it with my own hands or something.
Not everyone puts as low a value on the material as you do, boss, Molly said. For them, maybe the extra material value represented by a higher price tag is significant.
I grunted. It's still stupid.
From your perspective, Molly said, it's really all about perspective, isn't it?
And from the perspective of those in need, that extra quarter of $1 million your material person spent on the prestige addition for his house looks like an awful lot of life-saving food and medicine that could have existed if the jerk with the big house in the suburbs hadn't blown it all to artificially inflate his socio-geographic penis.
Heh, Molly said. And their house is much nicer than your house.
And that, I said. Mouse grumbled quietly in his sleep from the back seat, and I turned to reach back and rub his ears until he settled down again. Molly sat quietly for almost a minute before she said,
"What else do we do?"
"Other than sit tight and watch," I asked. "This is a stakeout, Molly. It's what you do on a stakeout."
"Stakeouts suck,"
Molly said, puffing out a breath that blew a few strands of hair out of her eyes.
"How come Murphy isn't doing this part? How come we aren't doing magic stuff?"
"Murphy is keeping track of Rudolph at work," I said. "I'm watching his home. If his handler wanted him dead, this would be a logical place to bushwhack him."
"And we're not doing magic because..."
"What do you suggest we do?"
"Tracking spells for Rudolph and Maggie," she said promptly.
"You got any of Rudolph's blood, hair, fingernail clippings?"
"No," she said.
"So no tracking spell for him," I said.
"But what about Maggie?" she said. "I know you don't have any hair or anything from her, but you pulled a tracking spell for me using my mother's blood, right? Couldn't you use your blood for that?"
I kept my breathing steady and prevented the flash of frustration I felt from coming out in my voice. "First thing I tried, right after I got off the phone with Susan when this all started." Molly frowned.
"Why didn't it work?"
"I don't know," I said. "Maybe it's because there's something more than simple blood relation involved. Maybe there has to be a bond, a sense of family between the parent and child that the tracking spell uses to amplify its effects. Maybe the red cord is using some kind of magic that conceals or jams tracking spells. God knows, they would have been forced to come up with some kind of countermeasure during the war." I shook my head wearily. "Or maybe it was simple distance. I've never tracked anything more than a couple of 100 linear miles away. I've heard of tracking spells that worked over a couple of 1,000 miles, but not from anyone who had actually done it. Give me some credit, Grasshopper. Of course I tried that. I wouldn't have spent half a day summoning my contacts if I hadn't."
"Oh," Molly said. She looked troubled. "Yeah, sorry."
I sighed and tipped my head back and closed my eyes. "No problem. Sorry, kid. I'm just tense."
"Just a little," she said. Should we be sitting out here in broad daylight? I mean, we're not hiding the car or anything." Yeah, I said. We want to be visible.
Why?
I'm going to close my eyes, I told her, just for a bit. Stay alert, okay? She gave me a look, but said, okay.